Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, or whenever you happen to be listening to this. Welcome to the Film Realist Podcast, the film and TV podcast from a complete nobody. That is hopefully for somebody. My name is Kyle Naranya, and welcome to episode 214, where on this week's episode of the podcast, I'm going to be reviewing Batman Caped Crusader Season 2. As the show is now available, this is going to be full spoilers. It's available on Prime Video, so you have been warned. Time codes will be listed in the description should you feel the need to hop around, but let's return to Gotham City with Batman Caped Crusader Season 2.
I've come to awaken you.
To show you.
Show me what?
What you are.
I reviewed the first season of Batman Caped Crusader with friend of the show Dylan Pollock and gushed about it. I absolutely loved it. And what is so awesome about Batman is there have been so many different interpretations, and what they were very successful at in the first season is managing to deliver something that felt spiritually similar to Batman the Animated Series, but also succinctly its own interpretation. These characters are so long-lasting that you need for something to feel specifically unique to their version of the characters. I did a non-spoiler review on the Multiverse of Color where I addressed a lot of what I loved about the season, but because this is spoilers now, I can really dive into those things, which is the world of Gotham City is changed after Rupert Thorne has actually been successfully arrested. That is where the first season of this show ends, where Batman tells him, like, I'm on you now. I understand what I've done, what has happened because of the Penguin and all the other villains that he's faced, that he feels prepared now to take down Rupert Thorne, and ending obviously on the tease of the Joker, Batman's greatest villain. But I don't want to get there yet because there's so much meat to what this version of the character is. The main antagonist for the show, ironically, is maybe who you wouldn't suspect, and it's actually the Riddler for most of this season, which is awesome because this interpretation, to me, feels so heavily inspired by versions of the character that are outside of the norm. We are aware of the overly obsessed puzzler, who's actually, ironically, a different Batman villain, but the Riddler in general is always very clinical and cerebral in where he wants to challenge Batman, thinking of his representation in Batman the Animated Series. But there's also the serial killer nature that we got in The Batman, and this version is on its own thing, but also feels inspired by Jim Carrey's zaniness. The Riddler, historically speaking, is not really that kind of character, but in this interpretation, what we get is somebody who is not the Riddler because he leaves riddles, because he riddles his enemies with bullets. Somebody that is much more unafraid of violence and leans into that, is power hungry. He has taken over Gotham City's mob from Rupert Thorne while he's under investigation and thrives once Rupert Thorne goes missing. Thus him being the main antagonist for a heavy portion of this season. And this is one of Batman's main problems, which is there's a sort of power vacuum with Rupert Thorne no longer in the picture, thus leading to a mystery who this character is. Things are happening more extreme, more chaos that you would typically lead up to being with a different Batman villain, maybe the Joker. Again, we're not going to get there. That's just another tease. But this show's versions of the villains are rewarding because there's always a familiar nature. There's a key character type that you expect from them, but this plays with your expectation in the way that they're demonstrated throughout this season. The version of the Scarecrow is unlike something you wouldn't expect you would get. We get the Rocketeer, who, as opposed to being someone who's typically just a thrill seeker, she's much more built into the actual science of the character, somebody who was wronged for their ideas and who was ultimately destroyed and nearly killed by the Terrible Trio, which is I understand some people may think these are just spins on versions of the characters that we got in Batman the Animated Series, which to some degree that sentiment is not necessarily untrue, but if you are unaware of those versions, it just feels like we're getting fresh takes on a world that feels so lived in, and the way that the characters are woven through the grand season as a whole is very different from the first season, making this not feel like it's retreading anything from the premiere season of the show. The first season was much more about Batman, his relationship with Gotham City, and then the story of Harvey Dent's run for mayor and the downfall leading to Two-Face, really leaving Gotham in not necessarily a great place. Batman is reluctant to have any relationships with anybody, even though he slowly builds one specifically with Barbara and not really with Jim in this season. But because things are getting more extreme in terms of the villains that are showing up, as well as the situations that Batman finds himself in, reluctantly, even though he is very much a solo individual, Batman develops more of a relationship with Jim and Barbara, heavily influencing their actions, working directly with them, even though we get Batman working with Harley Quinn, a version of the character that was so interesting in the first season that I was very curious to seeing if they were going to have her work with the Joker at all, because the Harley Quinn that was presented in that first season was much more independent, and the psychiatrist that she was, the way that she used it, Harley was just as twisted as we've grown to know her in other interpretations, but this version worked independently from the use of the Joker. Now we'll finally get to him because it's incredibly important to talk about the Joker. He is Batman's greatest villain. There have been incredible Jokers. The obvious ones come to mind being Jack Nicholson, Heath Ledger, Mark Hamill being obviously the greatest Joker of all time. But then you had Cesar Romero in Batman 66 in the series. Joker is a character that you can do incredibly well, and he is just as flexible in terms of his presentation than Batman himself. Batman is awesome in this. Hamish Linklater really leans into his version of the character, and he feels so specific in his representation of Batman, that isolation that he has, and the way in which he talks to Pennyworth, not Alfred, and through his trials and tribulations in this season, leading to a revelation of how he actually feels about Alfred, finally just saying Alfred. For this version of Bruce and Batman, that's a meaningful interaction where he's constantly referred to him as the help. He's had this separation because of the trauma he's experienced as a young boy, and now as Batman, things are getting crazier and crazier. The Joker, unlike any other version in, I would say maybe the only similarity would be that of The Dark Knight, but in terms of his mentality and the pathos of this version, what's terrifying about this version of the Joker is that he's incredibly subdued. We're all aware of the craziness, the agent of chaos, the wackiness, the zaniness, all those things that you would use to describe the Joker and the expectation that you would see those. And we don't really get them in this version of the show, which is something that all of this just helps solidify this show is uniquely its own, understands its grasp of character and the way that it's going to present them in a refreshing way in which it's going to draw audiences in, because you don't know what's going to happen. We don't have any real expectations of what could be delivered based on this being so different. Matthew Needham is quiet and manipulative, and each scene that the Joker has in this show just builds, and you're so curious as to what his grand plan is going to be. He slowly shows up and he's used sparingly in each and every episode and has this grand plan because he sees the chaos, and in a way that we've seen from other Batman villains, he believes that he and Batman are one and the same, that they both have an objective goal, that they serve Gotham, that there's a purpose to what they do. And Batman comes to this realization of who he is, and his morality is tested. The Joker wants to break him. Batman does not kill. He's killed in some versions. He does not kill in this version. And the Joker is testing him. He wants to break this person who seems to have such a moral high ground, and things would be so much easier if you just stepped over the line. I've created such chaos that you are incapable of sticking to the morality that makes you think you're this person who is above the chaos of society. He creates blockbuster gas-spewing corpses, and we get a Gotham enveloped by Joker's madness. We've seen the simplicity of Joker just killing somebody with laughing gas, and we get a lot of those touchstones throughout this season, but he's much more terrifying because of the quiet contemplation of the character. Each of the villains in each of the episodes just felt like a breath of fresh air. The Scarecrow, quite literally wearing one of those masks that we'd seen from doctors during the Black Plague, and he's a Scarecrow. We get to see a character that we are familiar with, but the reveal of who he is and the way in which they are using the monikers around their name might be different. We have a character in this season named Rose, who I just called Poison Ivy, even though technically she doesn't really lean into all of what you'd expect. She's connected to a character called Thorn, who is very much in line with Poison Ivy, but it doesn't need to do all of the things you want from her. She doesn't poison kiss. She is just a vicious individual, and we see the psychological torment of somebody losing a loved one. Just like we've seen with Bruce Wayne, we get somebody who's mental illness is biological. Her mother also dealt with this after the life they've lived with her father and the stress of him being a prior police officer. Each of the villains that they integrated into this show help paint the picture of what this season is and the effective nature in which writers who have typically worked on network television understanding how to tell a series that each episode is rewarding but fills out a season of television, a full 10-episode arc that feels satisfying by the end. It was so rewarding to watch each episode back to back to back, and in the way in which it's going to be released, you have the opportunity to do that. Each episode is half an hour. I can't believe I didn't say this yet, but the actual title cards that they created for the first season are actually in the show now, help fit in with that retro aesthetic, this 1940s nature. I love this show through and through. The animation is great. The characters are just so fleshed out and feel three-dimensional, regardless of the fact that they're actually two-dimensional. Each of the villains that they choose to use, the elements of Batman evolving, him going undercover as Matches Malone to learn more of what's going on, the ever-growing mystery around the disappearances, bodies not being where they're supposed to be. And there are even characters that are a part of this story that don't wind up becoming the villains that you would expect them to become, even though they're based on comic book characters. We get a Mad Hatter who's not necessarily the Mad Hatter as a villain, but a talking head, somebody who is commenting in that era on what's going on. We see the social relationship with the public as well as the GCPD on Batman becoming more involved. This idea that this guy who was just a myth and a wanted vigilante by the police force is kind of important to what Gotham is and is going to be a part of its future. We don't get the Bat Signal, which is something I really hoped we were going to get in this season. It's very heavily teased. We see Jim Gordon drawing it out and those characters being brought closer and closer together to solve the greatest problem that this city has ever faced, having blockbuster-infused Joker henchmen running all over the place. The chaos is entertaining, and you just feel like the fuse is lit by the first episode and that it continues to burn by the very end. Each of these characters was really great, except for, I would say, maybe their version of Mr. Zero. I kept calling him Mr. Freeze in my notes, but ultimately that's not really the character that he is. But it fits in with this era. Anytime the show wants to give us a character we're familiar with, they nail their interpretation. And I just hope we get many more seasons of this show. As of right now, we only know that there's going to be the two. But Batman Caped Crusader has established itself as one of the best interpretations of the Dark Knight. I hope that there are more. Haymitch Linklater is a Batman voice, belongs on the Mount Rushmore. I can't wait to watch this season again, and I can't wait for you to watch this season. If you've watched it already by the time you've listened to this, make sure to let me know what you thought of it in the comments, but that will do it for my full spoiler thoughts on Batman Caped Crusader Season 2. Next week's episode of the podcast is going to be a review of Spider-Man Brand New Day with friend of the show, Cade Onder. So make sure you're following on your preferred podcast platform so you don't miss that episode. And because it is going to be a review of the newest Spider-Man film, that is the inspiration for the question of the week. What is your favorite live-action Spider-Man film? To answer, you can email the podcast filmrealistpod@gmail.com, or you can answer directly on YouTube and Spotify, or you can at the Film Realists on any of the social medias. Just make sure to include the hashtag QOTW. If you are watching this podcast on YouTube, make sure to like the video as well as subscribe. It helps the podcast get into more people's algorithms, which means it's heard by more people, which is hopefully heard by more somebodies. Thank you so much for listening to the show. I can't wait to see you for Spider-Man Brand New Day. My name is Kyle Naranja, and I will see you next time.